supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we have a very important special edition of the show for you today, Cats and Kittens. Last year at this time, Dr. Dina Fonseca, professor of entomology and public health at Rutgers University, came into the studio to tape an interview about the timely topic of mosquitoes. Normally, we tape about 20 minutes for an interview and then edit that down to 8 or 10 of on-air material. But she wasn't saying anything we were willing to cut. So instead, we kept going. And what you'll hear today is essentially our entire conversation. She's a PhD, what talks in quotes. And I guarantee you will be astounded by some of the things you're going to hear over the next hour. So let's get started. Well, it's time to welcome our very special guest, Dr. Dina Fonseca, professor of entomology at Rutgers University, also a professor in the School of Public Health at Rutgers, and she's been heavily involved in mosquito research, especially recently, and took the time to actually come to our studios, which we greatly appreciate. Dr. Fonseca, thank you so much for coming to You Bet Your Garden today. Well,
thank you for having me.
So, obviously, mosquitoes are hot in the news now with the fears of this new Zika virus, which is not a new virus. It's been around since the 1940s, right?
Well, it was first described in 1947, but it was just described from monkeys in Africa, in Uganda, in the Zika forest. So it was really only recently, in 2007, that they started to have outbreaks in humans. And things really kind of moved really fast just in since 2012, where the numbers really several epidemics across the Pacific, and then presumably only in 2015, possibly earlier than that, it arrived in the New World in Brazil. It's very similar to other viruses that have been circulating, so it might have been confused, so not recognized earlier.
Right. There's a lot of news coming in about this as you and I sit here. So I think it's important to tell people we're taping this interview shortly after Valentine's Day, and it'll probably air a couple of weeks after that. So there's going to be a lot of news in between now and then. But one of the reasons I would have had you on the show anyway is we're coming up to mosquito season again. And every year I see people's, I guess you got to use the word fears, building, especially since the introduction of the so-called Asian mosquito.
Right.
Yeah.
So the Asian tiger mosquito was really a wake. There were two wake-up calls, and we should have awakened. Apparently, we didn't. One was West Nile virus, and that is transmitted by a mosquito that has been in our backyards for many, many years, Culex mosquitoes.
And arguably, that's a much more serious virus.
It's hard. I mean,
it takes out the young and old, right?
Mostly the old. But it's also, so West Nile virus is a virus that really only is symptomatic in a very, very, very small proportion of people. In contrast, something like chikungunya, something you may have spoken about previously, almost everybody that gets the virus is symptomatic. Dengue is more 50-50. And now Zika, our calculations are that about 20% of those infected are going to have symptoms. So I don't know. The symptoms of West Nile are really quite mild, although if you already have an underlying condition, it can kill you. I mean, can definitely have.
But again, we're talking about a small percentage, a lot of people who get bitten and are actually infected and might show antibodies in a test, never really have any kind of symptoms. They may think they had the flu for a day or something.
But Zika, chikungunya, dengue, and dengue kind of dengue and yellow fever in their own little group. Chikungunya and Zika are considered pretty mild. I mean, it's a painful arthritis, fever, rash. Zika now also associated with optical, so you have sort of pink eye conjunctivitis. Dengue is in a first infection, sort of similar to that, but then if you get a second infection with a different serotype, can kill you. It can be a hemorrhagic fever like yellow fever. So there's sort of a range of things about these diseases, and we've kept dengue fever relatively under control, although we have epidemics or higher than normal numbers in people in Florida, also in Texas,
Right. This is always going to be a situation right. where our southern listeners are in danger much more often for sometimes the entire year.
That's correct.
Right?
Yeah.
They don't get a break in the
wintertime. The population, so the primary vector of all of these diseases, these arboviruses, arthropod-transmitted viruses, is really the house mosquito, a mosquito that is aegypti, the yellow fever mosquito, that is basically so adapted to our homes and in southern locations where people have their doors open, their windows open for air circulation. The mosquito is actually living indoors. It is aegypti. Really, almost 100% of their blood meals are going to be from humans if they're available. And in a lot of locations, we are available. We're let our windows open, no screens, a lot of time spent outdoors.
Okay. May I just say that would be dumb? I mean, you're in the School of Public Health, and we were talking before we sat down that when you're talking about mosquitoes and mosquito-borne illnesses, I think the doctrine of public health is as important as entomology because it's public health that's ended these epidemics. It's public health specialists. I mean, go back to the guy with cholera and the well pump in England, right? That was the beginning of the public health system.
But interestingly enough, the vast majority of public health programs currently in the United States do not include mosquitoes or vector-borne diseases as part of their teachings.
They should.
Thank you.
Now, you were just in Washington testifying about this, right, to two separate organizations.
Well, I couldn't say I'm testifying. I was asked to provide information. I was part of the audience. The two people that are testifying were the head of CDC, Tom Frieden, and the head of NAID. Definitely the House of Representatives, Congress, members, the political body is interested in knowing from experts what's going on, what are the best steps to follow through. One thing I heard very clearly, it was the question, you were just here for Ebola. We just talked about chikungunya. Now it's Zika. What's going on? And that's
and what's your answer?
Well, so what's going on is that we have one tiny little world where people are
being moved. It used to be so much bigger. It used to be so much harder to get to other continents.
That is true. And so it's a good thing that we have now one big village. But at the same time, that means that somebody infected with a virus can arrive where that disease is circulating, can arrive in Washington, D.C., still infectious. And an important thing to mention is that someone infected with these kinds of viruses has a very small window during which they actually are infectious to a mosquito. Usually, depending a little bit on the virus, it can be just 2 days to up to about a week. And we're hypothesizing for Zika is about a week.
But I was thinking about this because I was thinking about I was to Cuba a couple of years ago, and my wife and I were in France just this past summer. And I know from way back being a science writer that they fumigate the plane surreptitiously when you're coming back. At some point, they're trying to kill any insects that came onto the plane with you. And I'm realizing, but it wouldn't matter if passenger 57 was bitten by a mosquito in his hotel the night before he came to the airport, gets off in Philly, Baltimore, Washington, Charlottesville, gets bit by a mosquito. He's the vector.
That is correct.
You know, we're almost like more mosquitoes.
That is exactly right. When you started talking about the disinsection, I thought, man, it's great because we don't want new species of mosquitoes arriving in our shores. But it's very unlikely that the disease was coming an infected mosquito. It's much more likely exactly what you described. You have a passenger that is infected, and that passenger is going to be
so
the vector.
So there's no way to prevent that.
Well, you simply have, and this is something that has been my call, even when we were developing programs for the Asian tiger mosquito, we need the public to understand that it's a responsibility of someone that is coming in that could potentially be infected, and you may not even be necessarily symptomatic and still be infectious to mosquitoes. So if you were in an area where there is transmission of these kinds of diseases, restrain yourself from being in a situation where you're going to get bit by mosquitoes.
Okay, so that's a really interesting point. All right, we need to take a short break so that I can announce I'll appear at the Master Gardener's Spring Symposium in Fayetteville, North Carolina on March 25th, and in beautiful State College, PA on Friday evening, April 7th, and Saturday morning, April 8th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of our interview with Rutgers entomologist Dr. Dina Fonseca and a rundown of all the things you can do to protect your family from skeeters this summer. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to a very special rebroadcast of You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating 140 years of introducing unique new varieties and providing treasured heirlooms, hardworking hybrids, live plants, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. More at burpee.com.
Mosquitoes are mischievous. They like to drink our blood. Buzzy little critters. Ooh, ooh. The female is the only one who likes to drink your blood. Bitey, itchy insects, ooh, ooh. The male eats only plants. They live near water too. Noisy, snippy things, ooh. Mosquitoes are mischievous, they carry illness too. When it lands on you,
run, or smash it, or yell, or cover up, or tell your mom and dad, or your grandma, your grandpa, call the army, call the police. Well, not the police.
Mosquitoes are mischievous, they like to drink our blood. Buzzy little critters, ooh, ooh. The female is the only one who likes to drink your blood. Bitey, itchy insects, ooh, ooh. The male eats only plants. They live near water, too.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we are devoting our entire show today to a complete rebroadcast of an interview I taped last year with Dr. Dina Fonseca, professor of entomology and public health at Rutgers University. When we left you a few minutes ago, Dr. Fonseca had just uttered the unquestionably good advice to, quote, refrain from being bitten if you must travel to areas where disease-carrying mosquitoes are prevalent. Let's pick up as we discuss exactly how to deny that mosquito her meal. Say you have no choice. You come back from Brazil. Or we decide that the risk is much lower than we fear it is right now, the risk of terrible things happening to babies, for instance, and we decide to continue with the Summer Olympics uh-huh. in Brazil. Mm-hmm. And you come back from Brazil. If you prevent yourself from being bitten by a mosquito, really being crazy about it for like 2 weeks,
one week,
you could save hundreds of lives.
Absolutely. 1 week. I mean, the
and think of it as depriving the mosquitoes, right? You're not going to get my blood, you
Absolutely.
Little vampire.
Absolutely. Exactly right. It's it really isn't that complicated. We live in houses that are mostly air-conditioned. Air conditioning is the worst thing for a mosquito. Dryness will kill mosquitoes. Again, windows and door screens, try to restrain yourself being outside.
And if you're going to go outside and it's mosquito season, obviously because I'm an organic gardener, I won't use DEET. But I was even I'm thrilled to see how much the CDC over the years has accepted some of the herbal alternatives that have been proven very effective in studies, specifically lemon eucalyptus.
Lemon eucalyptus, absolutely. In fact, a recent study just ranked that on par with DEET.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you don't have to. And especially if you're talking about the pregnant women, the fear that's there, DEET does pass through your blood system. So you don't want to be doing that. But if lemon eucalyptus is just as good, then you're keeping yourself just as safe during this potentially very harmful period. And you smell good. You smell lemony fresh. What's the downside?
The only downside, and it's not a downside, again, if people are aware of this, is that you may have to reapply more often than if you were using DEET. So carefully read the concentrations.
And isn't that true of everything?
Absolutely.
I mean, how many people use sunscreen in the morning and can't figure out why they had such a bad sunburn the next morning, because they went swimming four times and you didn't put any more on. That's why.
Absolutely.
We're speaking with Dr. Dina Fonseca, professor of entomology and public health at Rutgers University, in an interview we recorded last month. So right now, you're with me in Philadelphia shortly after a record-setting snowfall. And you had to drive through one of the most hideous movie rainstorms of all time to be here. I drove in today, and I could not see at times. So we're getting many, many inches of rain. And spring is right around the corner. I mean, if you were a mosquito, wouldn't you be waving little pom-poms right now? All this moisture that's been accumulated, there's no place in the soil for it. There are going to be a lot of places for the first generation of this year's mosquitoes in the north to breed.
Okay, so a couple of things. Most of the mosquitoes I am worried about, which are house mosquitoes, so urban mosquitoes, would not lay eggs in a puddle. They're looking for containers. So they're looking for a specific kind of either a bucket, plastic has been a godsend.
Cat food can that fell out of the recycling
that's exactly
bin.
Right. Yes, but actually, so those are, and really, the first thing we need to do is remove all those kinds of containers. And we need to start doing that. So in terms of these mosquitoes waving their hands, there are actually female mosquitoes that overwintered as adults, like little bears. Those are Culex mosquitoes. They overwinter as adults. And once you start getting warm outside, they'll come out looking for blood. They're mated. They're just looking for blood.
And they're exhausted, though, right?
Well, they're depends on how well they were at collecting sugar in the fall. So that's how they get fattened up. And so they then survive the winter.
And I'm sure you've heard this trick. I'm sure this is not new to you, but it's something I learned from my friend Howard Garrett down in Texas a few years back that he learned from an entomologist. And it's don't empty your standing water outside. Treat it all with BTI and make sure it stays treated. Because these female mosquitoes are going to find some place. If they
right.
if they take a blood meal, they're going to find some place to lay their eggs. So make it easy. Make it kind of like a bear trap where they're going to lay their eggs, and it won't harm that female mosquito, of course. And she'll think
she will have no fitness. Very harmful.
Right. And she'll have no qualms. She won't know the eggs are in danger because they will continue to process for a couple of days. And then when they get to, I don't know if instar would be a correct term for this
instar.
They'll get shut down and they won't be able to emerge from
actually,
the water.
Actually, with BTI, they'll die the moment they emerge.
Okay, from the egg.
Yes, the eggs, there is no way to kill an egg at this point. But the moment the first instar emerges, if it starts feeding on the BTI, they will be killed. So it's a very efficient, and that's a wonderful idea, actually. We talked about trying to use that kind of strategy for controlling the Asian tiger mosquito, because although in the case of Asian tiger mosquitoes, it's a little bit more delayed. So they're actually overwintering right now, and that would be true. Actually, in the case of Asian tiger mosquito, they're overwintering as eggs. So once it starts to get warmer, the eggs then hatch. Then you still have to have all these larvae develop. Mm-hmm. And so these are containers and areas that were maintained that are still full of eggs throughout the entire winter.
Is this only in the south, or can these eggs be frozen and unfrozen?
No, this is in the north. This is right here in our backyards right now.
So these are tough eggs.
So these are what we call overwintering or diapausing eggs. So they the females in the middle of August, females start getting light clues to start laying these kinds of diapausing eggs. And so that's why the populations crash, in September, October. And so they lay these diapausing eggs. The eggs survive the entire winter, and so they're very tough. They're particularly, again, bigger and more fat reserves and very thick chitinous exoskeleton on the outside. So they survive, and then they hatch in the spring. If you go into the south and you start looking at populations of the yellow fever mosquito, they can't do that. So they cannot survive the winter. So the
females survive in the adult stage in some sheltered area.
No, there is basically no winter in the south. So if you have you can have the larvae. So you have continuous. That's why you were saying earlier there is no respite in the south. It's just the populations tend to. If it gets a little cooler, which it does in the south, even in the south it gets cooler in the winter,
then they
just slow down. Exactly. So you have lower populations, but your populations are continuously churning because these females cannot lay eggs that can wait out a wintering or a cold season.
Mike McGrath, and you're listening to an interview with Dr. Dina Fonseca, professor of entomology and public health at Rutgers University. So our typical advice used to be, go out in your property and check everything. One thing Howard told me is he started to realize, oh, my God, over the winter you just throw stuff around. You don't care anymore. And he would see a plastic bag laying on the ground, and he'd pick it up, and he'd realize there's enough water in there to be a breeding spot.
So in the spring, right.
So you want to be meticulous about that stuff. But then after that, we have suggested instead of, getting rid of your standing water, treating it. Which sounds like it would be even more effective on these Asian tiger mosquitoes, because even if you dump them out, it may be moist enough there for them to.
Well, actually, I have a former, actually currently assistant professor at Louisiana State University that tested that we hear this all the time. Oh, they can develop in a bottle cap.
Mm-hmm.
So she asked, can they develop in a bottle cap? So she did all these experiments in the laboratory, and she said they can if it were to rain every other day.
Right.
So normally they really can't.
But now she knows how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, right?
Excellent researcher. That's exactly the right thing to do. So it's these the more important, but the containers we found to be more important are things like buckets, even recycling buckets.
Oh yeah,
where a little bit of water accumulates on the rim.
Right, they got holes in the bottom, but it may not be perfectly drained.
Yes, exactly. And also things like that you don't expect, things like tarps. When you fold a tarp, you can
add
water on the inside.
Absolutely, that's kind of like the plastic bag.
Right, and then the third one, which is sort of a bit of a like was right there and we were not seeing, were these corrugated extension pipes that people use to divert water from the foundation. And they usually are accordion-like.
Oh,
and
sure,
every
I
single
know.
One of those little folds can accumulate water for long enough. Because it's dark, and these females will just go in, lay eggs throughout these little accordions, and we've collected, thousands of larvae inside these accordions.
So you got to take them off and clean them out or empty them out.
Or make them not accordion, as if they were smooth.
Yeah.
There might be a simple way so that's one part, and also the angle at which sometimes they're buried and they create almost like a pocket of water underground. So this what we call cryptic containers, like those, or we've done experiments.
You really got to use your head. You really got to go outside and think like a mosquito.
Yes.
Because one thing I will add, and it was just a personal discovery that I did accidentally. No entomologist told me this. But we empty our gutters every year. We clean out all the leaves and everything. And I actually had double-sized gutters, industrial gutters, installed in my house because we live in the woods.
Right.
And there's a lot of schmutz that accumulates there. But one spring we had a dead branch fall on our roof. And I wanted to get that dead branch off because, rotting wood. It could have termites or carpenter ants in it. So I went up and got the branch off. It was fine. There were no insects in it. But I realized over the winter, my gutters had gotten all clogged again. And there were mosquito breeding parties. They were like on spread. They had little party hats and vodka. Exactly. So since then, that's one thing I've said. Even though you don't want to do it, get up in your gutters. Clean them out. If there's a spot in your gutters that just refuses to be cleaned and holds water, sprinkle BTI from one end of your gutter the other. But to me, that's the big unseen breeding area, and you're talking about the house. They're almost living in your house, and you're making it easy for them. Right. So as soon as you come out, they've got a short flight. That's a commuter flight with like seven seats on it. Right.
And there is another aspect, and since this is You Bet Your Garden, flowers also have a big influence on the mosquito's ability to survive. I mentioned already several times sugar.
The males are pollen gatherers.
And the females.
Yeah.
The females need to get, first thing they need to get is a sugar meal. They only need the blood, specifically the lady eggs. And so we're finding just a recent study showing that if you have, especially the kind of flowers, they're small little flowers, and lots of them, that you are more likely to get lots of eggs and then lots of larvae.
Oh, my goodness, but those are the best flowers to attract beneficial insects and pollinators.
This is exactly right. We need to do, but again, if you don't have a container in your garden, so if you can have the flowers, you simply wouldn't have less containers.
Right, because, empty out the bird bath or fill it with BTI.
So cost-benefit analysis. Figure out what you want. Realize what you want to bring in and what you may not want to bring in. And maybe it's the same attractant that is going to bring them both. But there are things that mosquitoes require. So the other part, the adult mosquitoes require humidity. So if you have overgrown vegetation, lots of bushes, in many ways what you would want to enjoy in the summer, that's going to make a very great habitat for the adult females to hang out. And so you may have a property that has lots of containers and may be a great producer of adults.
Oh, let me stop you right there. The worst problem in gardening and a huge problem in mosquito control is people buy these big containers and then they leave the saucers underneath them. And the saucers and the self-watering containers, I mean, instead of self-watering, just get a Sharpie, cross it off, and say mosquito breeding machine, right? Because as you point out, it's dark, it's water that's been sitting in there, it's unseen.
Yes. So those unseen containers are really, we need to sort of, think like a mosquito. What exactly are the kinds of containers where they're going to be laying eggs? And it's, again, depending on the species, something like the West Nile virus are going to go for an abandoned swimming pool.
That's a huge problem.
Asian tiger mosquitoes would not.
In these foreclosed areas, right?
Right. But for West Nile, however, an Asian tiger mosquito would not choose that as a place to lay eggs. So,
but isn't
species.
It getting back to public health? Isn't that a great investment? Because I know there are communities around the country that buy the BTI donut dunks in bulk and give them out to people, or send patrols around to throw them in abandoned swimming pools or unkept ponds and stuff like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep.
And once again, because we. You and I know what BTI is, but it's one of the family of BTs. It's a strain discovered on a cat's paw in Israel. That's why it's I for Israeliensis. And it has no effect on any other life form except members of the fly family that breed in moist environments. So it is the perfect control for mosquitoes, fungus gnats, biting midges, and black flies.
We've actually also developed, so I was at Rutgers we developed for 5 years, we ran the area-wide Asian tiger mosquito project funded by USDA to develop ways of managing the Asian tiger. And so we actually employed truck-mounted spraying of BTI.
That's amazing.
Over the houses and actually into backyards as a way to...
Because that would land on the humidified plants.
Right. And also will lay on any kind of containers. We did a lot of experiments humans, and it would go into the containers.
Oh my God, a spray truck that absolutely. You should welcome as opposed to running?
We had, this was all done in Trenton, in very high density populations with lots of Asian tiger mosquito, and the population accepted the spray trucks really well. They were very informed. They had lots of education, and that's definitely a very good strategy. The question really is how long does it last? So we found that this is ultra low volume amounts of little mixes of this powder in with water.
Mm-hmm.
There was a little bit of spotting in cars, for example, but the population took that as like, okay, that's okay. And it did not damage the car in any way. We just see it. And it really worked really well, just that it's something that needs to be an investment to do that. And in many cases, the feeling is that we don't have enough funding to be doing all of this, and we need the population to do more of their own backyard.
And that's one of the
control.
Things you were doing in Washington, right?
Right.
Was trying to get more funding.
Right.
All right, we need to take a short break so that I can announce that I will present a Titanic talk on tomatoes at close to the perfect planting time in Pennsylvania. Saturday, May 13th, during the big annual plant sale at the Seed Farm, a sustainable farming treasure in Emmaus, PA in the Lehigh Valley. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of our interview with Rutgers entomologist Dr. Dina Fonseca and a rundown of all the things you can do to protect your family from skeeters this summer. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to a very special rebroadcast of You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating 140 years of introducing unique new varieties and providing treasured heirlooms, hardworking hybrids, live plants, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. More at burpee.com.
Mosquitoes are mischievous. They like to drink our blood. Buzzy little critters. Ooh, ooh. The female is the only one who likes to drink your blood. Bitey, itchy insects. Ooh, ooh. The male eats only plants. They live near water too. Noisy, snippy things.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens, devoting our entire show to the rebroadcast of an interview I taped last season with Dr. Dina Fonseca, professor of entomology and public health at Rutgers University. When we left you a few minutes ago, Dr. Fonseca and I were discussing a fabulous study in which mosquito spray trucks, originally designed to release toxic pesticides, were retrofitted to spray a liquid form of BTI, the non-toxic larvicide that prevents mosquito eggs from hatching into biting adults. We pick up talking about the challenge of finding funding for such excellent prevention efforts. And then we proceed to her shocking revelation about research suggesting that gardeners are among the groups most frequently bitten. You know, mosquito control is not something people are going to shut their ears about right now. You're in the popular crowd. I mean, right? You're getting a lot of invitations. Now, I did not know that there were BTI spray trucks. You've made my day. Now, we know a lot of these communities have trucks that spray old school insecticides in the summertime, which to me was almost always a PR stunt because so little of the insecticide is hitting an adult mosquito.
And these are adulticides, right?
Right. But could these trucks be converted or simply used to spray?
Yeah. Actually, the same exact truck can be used. We tested that and published on that. You can use the same exact spray equipment to apply these emulsions of BTI. And we've had really good results with that as a larvicide. Because in the feeling of a lot of professional mosquito control programs, if you already have to deal with the adults, you failed your mission.
You really have. It's right. Geometry and right. It's geometry in its worst form.
Right.
You know, you start out with 10, and then, you know, by the end of the summer, you've got 10 billion,
right.
Whereby you take that 10 down to 8. And you've done an enormous job of keeping that 1 year, for instance, where we cleaned out those gutters the first time. Mm. I had all these mosquito magnets and other different machines, attractant machines to test. I didn't catch anything, but we also didn't get bit.
It sounds like a correlation, right?
Yeah, because we had cleaned out the
right,
gutters.
Right.
And now, every spring, I clean out the gutters and put out BTI traps.
Right. Yeah, I mean, And the other part we're saying, I mean, in these northern latitudes, we have the winter. I mean, right now, anybody can come into the United States infected with any of these different arboviruses. And in the northern United States, really, there is no danger. There are no mosquitoes that would transmit it. And that person will pass on from infectious to non-infectious.
Right. Anybody coming from Brazil to Minnesota, they're not a threat.
To New Jersey. I mean, to Pennsylvania. I mean, these mosquitoes are not – the vectors are not going to show up until middle of July. Really, in numbers, that would really make a difference. You start seeing some adults in May, and then, as you mentioned, it's a numbers game. You have exponential growth of these populations. So another very important thing is let's use this sort of weak phase early in the season. Lots of I mean, your idea of basically creating the habitat for the females to lay eggs and then destroy the offspring is a really good idea. But then this to remove those containers so that they don't become a productive habitat.
Right.
But
you got to keep refreshing the BTI.
Right.
On schedule, and when you're not willing to do that anymore, you run
remove
out,
then
you make sure they're
right.
They're emptied
right.
Or washed out every 5 days.
And we've demonstrated that if you have to impact them early in the season, you've basically stop this exponential growth from being as big and you slow it down so you don't ever get to the huge populations that you would otherwise. So it's just we need to use the biology and, I guess, the mathematics to control these mosquitoes.
I'm Mike McGrath. This is You Bet Your Garden, and you're listening to a very special interview with Dr. Dina Fonseca, professor of entomology and public health at Rutgers University. Now, somebody is, and again, there is this whole still strong possibility we're going to have the Olympics in Brazil. I mean, I know right now it's up in the air, but let's say somebody travels. For instance, when I went to Cuba, if I was going to Cuba this summer, would I be at risk? I mean, that seems to be in the general area of this new virus.
Okay. I'm not 100% sure if Cuba itself is having a lot of cases.
Not,
for example, Puerto Rico.
Yeah, you don't have to go very far south.
No.
So let's say somebody is traveling to one of these areas. One of the smart monies would say, well, don't get bit while you're there. And one of the things I recommend for tick control is permethrin-impregnated clothing,
yeah,
which works against mosquitoes, mm-hmm, except for the parts of your body that are exposed. So would you say if somebody is traveling to an area where and why would it even have to be about this virus? Like
absolutely.
The other ones weren't bad enough?
Absolutely.
You wear protective clothing as much as you can. And you don't have to be crazy and wear a bee hat, right? You can use lemon eucalyptus and just reapply it frequently. And
The interesting thing about the tropical population, so the main vector is Aedes aegypti, the yellow fever mosquito, which interestingly enough is actually not that common. We tend to project what our experience has been with the Asian tiger mosquito, which actually reaches much higher numbers up here in our temperate zone than the yellow fever mosquito does in the tropics. So especially for most of our listeners that are going to be staying in hotels which are air conditioned. The risk
you're
is really
going out on field trips. Right. Maybe you're going to the rainforest or something like
but
that.
But the rainforest actually is not where these mosquitoes are going to be. These are urban mosquitoes. So
okay.
So actually the rainforest, we're good. It's really maybe the houses. It's definitely the houses in the rainforest or the houses in your urban area that are going to have more of these vectors. So
is there anything missing with protective clothing and repellent on exposed skin?
No. I mean, it really is a question of if you start, you try to avoid areas. And I know that Brazil is putting an enormous amount of effort into, what do you call that, control programs in place so that they really reduce the populations of the primary vector, which is the yellow fever mosquito. It really is kind of difficult to tell somebody absolutely do not get bit by a mosquito, and it really only takes one.
Right.
And
it's no fun to get bit by a mosquito.
Right. So there are what you described is exactly the right thing. I mean, long sleeves, and as much as that, it's uncomfortable. It may be a smart bet.
Not if you shop correctly, right? Because
right. Light.
People who've been in the tropics have known this for years. And they wear like long
and
sleeves.
And also light colors. Experiments
exactly.
Shown that.
You know, buy the clothing yeah. that makes sense for the area. And one thing you said, you've seen a correlation in the United States, high concentrations of these mosquito diseases in people who are well off, and you think that's because they're outside gardening.
Well, not the diseases themselves, but actually we do analysis where we find from blooded mosquitoes what species did they bite, and also we do these experiments in different parts in different socioeconomic areas of cities. What we actually found is a lot of blood meal from humans is coming from well off areas with beautiful gardens, and so gardeners, because they're outside during the day, which is these are day biting mosquitoes, really need to take special care not to be bit.
Again, there is permethrin-treated clothing from a company called Insect Shield. There's special tropical clothing and lemon eucalyptus as a very effective but non-toxic mosquito repellent.
And, of course, remove all water containers, as many as you can, or treat them in your yards. And by the way, I mean, gardeners are actually, for these Asian tiger mosquitoes, we did blood meal analysis. We're finding that in very wealthy neighborhoods, we have a lot of blood meals from humans. And I think, and we're hypothesizing, this may be gardeners because they're the ones that are outside during the day.
Right.
And so it's an important thing to have this be heard by gardeners.
Well, I can't remember the last time I have enjoyed an interview so much. Dr. Dina Fonseca from Rutgers University, where she is a professor of entomology and a professor in the School of Public Health. Thank you so much for being on You Bet Your Garden today. I know our listeners have learned a tremendous amount, because I certainly have.
Thank you.
Well, that was the best interview ever, huh? And now let's review the top points of mosquito prevention that we have learned today in the format of the question of the week with our show's peerless producer, Alexis Landis. Alexis, please get us started.
Well, Mike, as we learned in today's very special program, yes, there's the new Zika virus to fear, but we'll also see the return of old favorites like West Nile and other mosquito-carried ailments with the arrival of the warmer weather we're otherwise looking forward to. But as you and Rutgers entomologist Dr. Dina Fonseca have stressed, you can greatly diminish the number of mosquitoes that would otherwise plague your backyard this summer by taking action now.
Because if you knock down the numbers of the first couple of generations, you'll get the math on your side for a change. The mosquito population will still grow exponentially, but if that first number is 2 as opposed to 2,000, you're on your way to a fairly bite-free summer. Step one, clean up any trash in your yard. Mosquitoes can breed in bottle caps, plastic bags, and other places you might not expect.
But as Dr. Fonseca has been explaining over the past hour, there are two very different types of mosquitoes to protect against. And the more recent arrival, the day-flying Asian tiger mosquito Aedes, has a very different life cycle than the old friends we're used to.
Yeah, these aggressive daytime biters overwinter in the egg stage. But those eggs aren't floating on the surface of standing water like the eggs our old-school mosquitoes will soon be laying. They're attached to the sides of water-holding objects like wheelbarrows, ready to be activated when the weather warms up and the water level rises enough to reach them, like after a rainfall.
So just dumping out wheelbarrows, recycling bins, children's toys, and the like isn't enough with these terrors. You also have to scrub the eggs off the inside of any items that can hold water to destroy them. And then, of course, make sure those containers stay dry.
Or, if you want a no-scrubbing option, pour some BTI granules into any containers that are holding water or capable of holding water. If you go that route, I'd even suggest topping off the container so the eggs are subjected to the BTI-laced water right away.
And this is where we need to remind people that BTI, a naturally occurring soil-dwelling organism, is non-toxic to other non-biting creatures. It has no effect on fish, birds, pets, people, toads, etc. Okay? Now, the Culex mosquitoes we all grew up with, the ones that mostly bite when day changes over into evening, are already among us in the adult form. The last females of summer hibernate in sheds, garages, and other protected areas, emerge on the first nice day looking for a blood meal, and then seek out standing water in which to lay their eggs.
Which is why the old advice was to dump any water on your property to deny those mosquitoes that breeding ground. And that's still excellent advice. But this is another instance where you can use their breeding water against them by lacing that water with BTI dunks or granules, which will prevent those eggs from becoming biting adults. Deliberately put out standing water laced with BTI, and females will lay their eggs in the water, but no new mosquitoes will be born.
Now, I don't normally hear you surprised by anything during an interview, but Dr. Fonseca told you something that you had clearly not previously known about mosquito behavior.
And you know, I should have figured it out on my own, because I already did know that male mosquitoes are actually pretty good pollinators. They don't take blood meal. They get all their energy from the nectar and maybe some of the pollen of flowers. But Dr. Fonseca explained that the biting females, who I had previously really only thought of as bloodsuckers, also feed on the nectar of small flowered plants for energy.
And those are the exact same kinds of plants you're always telling gardeners to use to lure pollinators and beneficial insects to their backyards, especially in the spring.
Right, the same time of year we're telling everybody to prevent future mosquitoes. Why don't you do that by feeding them? Great idea. Luckily, the answer is once again BTI. If you place small containers of water near your earliest blooming flowers, treat the water with BTI, the females who visit those flowers will lay their eggs in this convenient water source, but no adult mosquitoes will emerge. Then do the same thing in the fall when those day flyers are laying their overwintering eggs.
Okay, so let's review. Empty and scrub plant saucers, outdoor children's toys, recycling bins, anything that can hold water, and then don't let those containers fill up with the water again.
Clean up any small trash in the yard. One of Dr. Fonseca's colleagues has shown that the day-flying Asian tiger mosquito can go from egg to adult using the amount of water in a bottle cap.
Put containers of water laced with BTI around your home and freshen up the BTI as directed, and make sure that some of those traps are near plants with small flowers.
And finally, if you have gutters, get up there and clean them out as well, or hire somebody to do it. Gutters are the great unseen breeding ground of mosquitoes, and they don't even have to be clogged to be dangerous. Just a low spot that doesn't drain well can breed these ancient disease-carrying enemies of mankind. Well, that sure was a lot of good information about mosquito prevention now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, and with links to more articles about BTI, to the astounding BTI published spray truck study, and to Rutgers informational websites about mosquito control, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. And that's not all, cats and kittens. As we go to press, or would go to press if we had presses, I think Terry Gross might have a coffee press in her office, Dr. Fonseca and her bottle cap colleague are trying to figure out the details of what we're calling citizen science, a way for you to report the results of using techniques like BTI traps around your house. We'll supply the details in an upcoming show. And now a little bit of business that I tried to retire from the show a couple of weeks back, but which now returns by special request, especially the requests of loyal listeners Rob and Karen in Spokane. Yikes! My producer is threatening to slip me some bogus BTI if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Oh, and if you don't include your location, we'll send you spam in return. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you will find those spam, but where you will find the answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Special thanks once again to Rutgers entomologist Dr. Dina Fonseca for sharing her excellent advice and information. And yes, your fabulous phone calls will return next week if you call 1-888-346-9499. Remember, only you can prevent forest fires and or boring phone calls. Rich Banowitz keeps our website free of boredom, assisted by that savage she-devil of the urban jungle, Sarah Kazar. Frequently bitten Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our editor, Al Banks, is often eaten up. Our intern, Eileen Kelly, has been smelling very lemony since we recorded that interview. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I'm so mean that I bite the mosquitoes back. But I'll still clean out the gutters and scrub out the recycling bin before I see you again next week.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 140th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
What can you expect to hear next week? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, I have no idea what we're going to do, only that it will be fun and that I will get into trouble. Plus your fabulous phone calls.